Just as a reminder on the housekeeping side, if you've got background noise in your home, please turn your mics to mute. And otherwise, take it away, Mike.
Okay. Well, it's 6 o'clock here on Thursday night, May 14th. I'm going to call our Administrative Control Board meeting to order. Looks like we got a little echo from somewhere.
Yeah. A little feedback. If everybody can turn their mics to mute if they're not speaking, that'd be great.
Okay. So, do we have any public input tonight? Doesn't sound like it. You know, one of these things we've started doing in these meetings is instead of doing a roll call vote, we'll just say, unless there's any objections, we'll consider it approved. Dave, can we try something like that? Are you seeing anybody else do that?
You still need a vote even on consent agenda items.
Okay, so we'll still do all those in favor. Okay.
Yeah.
So it doesn't sound like we had anything there on the public input. Item two is the audit presentation. Dana Howell.
Hello. It's finding my unmute button.
Yeah. Well.
Unusual circumstances. It's good to see all of you. I don't know, Lisa, do you ever put this up on the screen? Do we screen share it all, or should we just kind of go through it and figure everybody's seen it and stuff?
I think we can just go through it, and okay. It was in the board packet. If we have certain pages we want to look at, we can put it
okay.
up on the
screen. All right, I'll just go with that. Basically, I wasn't going to get into too much detail unless you do have questions. On the audited financial statements, the main thing to point out is that it's a clean opinion, meaning that the financial statements are reported in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. So that's all good, or, you know, just kind of normal status quo. I know you're all just totally long aware of it, but we have disclosure in here about the refunding. So it shows how the new bonds were issued and the portion of the 2012 and 2014 bonds were refunded. And it's on page 45 of the actual hard copy of the financials. And it's showing that you're having about $1.8 million in cash flow savings from that. And with the net present value, it's about, $1.5 million in net present value savings. So that was just fantastic situation for the year. So that was really, as far as, I know you guys have seen the numbers. There's nothing to report of huge significance other than, you know, steady state. Everything's in accordance with GAAP. Is there anything you would like to discuss in more detail on the financials?
I have just sort of this is Bob Neumeister.
Hi.
Two general questions. One is in regard to the management letter, was there anything of significance in that?
No, I was going to go to those next. There's a couple of letters.
Okay.
I'll just show them to you. One of them we have kind of this cover, and it's, we call it compliance letters. There are two different letters. One of them is required by government auditing standards, and we just basically comment on your internal controls and also on compliance that we test as part of the audit. We don't do any of this with a goal in mind of expressing an opinion on those items, but as part of the audit, we do review all of that, and we had no findings, and we don't even have any real comments because everything is running so well and the controls that are in place are functioning well and are well designed, to prevent any kind of fraud and such. That said, there's no guarantee, but the controls that are in place, we feel comfortable with, and we've gone over them with management and really didn't have anything to add and didn't find any problems this year. So that's the first letter in that little packet. The second letter is a letter to the state auditor's office about compliance in accordance with the state's legal compliance audit guide. And they have a list of a handful of things that we check. And this year you can see it's outlined. We check budgetary compliance that a budget was adopted as it was required. We check certain things with regard to the URS and the employees are getting picked up into the URS properly. We check different things about the open meetings as far as having training and that things are posted to the website, things like that. And then we also verify that the treasurer's bond is adequate for your level of revenues. So those are all the things we tested this year. Every third year, the state has us test a handful of other things. They just kind of alternate. Like I say, every third year, there's another set of items testing, and we'll need to do those next year. So next year, this would be a little bit more extensive. But again, in all of this, we didn't find any noncompliance. Everything was done. The I's were dotted and the T's were crossed. So there's nothing to report on that. We're just, it's awesome. Boring is good, right? So,
in this case, yes.
I know. I'm always happy when we can be boring. The other letter that accompanied your packet or was part of your packet is a letter to the board, and it's just kind of some boilerplate language that we're required to communicate with you. Basic stuff about significant accounting policies. We do note in this letter that there was one an accounting policy. It didn't change how we really account for anything. It's you can see it if you want to look at it, ASB statement number 88. And it really just changed disclosures that are required for some of the debt and added to it. So there's more footnotes that explain some of the debt and things like that. It had no effect on your financial statements in terms of the numbers, the net assets, the balance sheet, anything like that. Other than that, there was no changes from the prior year. The next page, we talk about whether there were any difficulties encountered. There are absolutely none. In fact, we even had these guys put their life on the line for me, and we had a COVID-free audit moment. So I was up in person doing stuff, and we all socially distanced. So I just really appreciate you guys' help getting that done. And we did really well doing it mostly electronically, but really, Steve and Lisa are just awesome to help get through it. We didn't have any adjustments to make. Everything was really clean when we got the audit, so there were no adjustments to bring to your attention. There were no disagreements with management. As far as we know, you didn't consult any other accountants about anything with regard to the financial statements, and there were just no other findings or issues to report to you. So it's a fantastic audit report, and really just we're so grateful for your help and the responses I get from the board when we ask you some questions just for some background info and everything. We really, really appreciate all your help. So with that, I am good.
Sort of a perfunctory question. Yeah. I know you've really sort of answered it in your other comments, but no issues with the fact we have a relatively small staff and separation of duties, you know, checks and balances, that kind of stuff, everything looks okay.
Yeah, it does. We've, especially the first year that we worked on the audit with you guys, we chatted. There was nothing major as far that needed correcting, but we really clarified who's doing what and how to make sure that you can separate things to the best of your abilities, given the size of your staff. And, you know, we felt quite comfortable with it. It seems well designed for the size of staff you have.
Great. Okay. And then I have one last question, but it's more prospective rather than retrospective. Okay. I've been reading a lot about pension funds being in trouble because of the drop in the market.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Do you have any sort of prognostication on what's happening with the Utah pension funds or any knowledge?
Utah has just rocked it. We're so lucky in that regard, and you guys are lucky as a board because the URS has managed it so well that really we're among, like, some literature that I had recently read, we're among only about 7 or 8 states that are in the 90% more funded level. And the URS just manages that so well. So yeah, we might have, there might be some impact this year because of the market volatility, but in general, we don't have the big train wreck that most of the states are dealing with, where they're only maybe 50% funded or 60% funded or something like that. It's a huge factor in even like the political situation right now with the bailouts that they're talking about. There's resistance to giving local governments too much bailout because they don't want them to just use it to fund these underfunded pensions. And we're just so lucky that it's not an issue in Utah. We're funded very, very closely to fully funded. And none of us foresee a big change because of the URS approach and the way they manage it. So there may be a slight uptick in your required contributions each year to kind of deal with it, but I would guess it will stay mostly status quo because they just are planning so well.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions for you guys?
Okay, well, yeah, thank you. That sounds like a really nice job of you, of course. Appreciate it.
I really appreciate you guys and Lisa and Steve. Thank you.
Yeah, they're awesome. They are. Yeah,
thank you, Dana. I appreciate it. And I appreciate you working through our field work at the kind of beginning of the whole COVID-19 thing. And she was great to be flexible, and we were able to, you know, not really move off our timeline and work to get it done, even though that was a big kind of a crisis we were dealing with while we're trying to get the audit done. So
you did an awesome job managing it. So it was all good on our side. So great. Thank you guys so much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. I will sign off and let you guys have the rest of a lovely evening.
Thank you very much.
Bye bye. Bye. Thank you.
Same to you.
You take care.
Thanks. Thanks, Dana.
Karen, I'm sorry that you missed the first minute or two of the meeting. I didn't realize that you weren't in, and I saw you waiting, so I apologize.
Did I miss anything interesting?
No, Dana had just started the intro, so.
Okay.
Okay, well, that was item 2 there on our agenda. Do we need executive session tonight?
We do, yes. So I've reviewed the attendee list. Everybody's authorized to be here. I'm just going to stop the recording and then restart.
So we're going to need a motion.
I move that we move to executive session.
Okay, that's Bob. Is there a second?
Yeah, I'll second that.
That's Ian. Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, that was...
All right, we're back recording. We're back in open session.
Okay. Item 4 is the consent agenda. We have the minutes, check register. Do we have any POs?
We do not have any POs.
No POs. Sorry.
Okay.
I had just one question about the minutes. I thought that I had asked, and I cannot remember honestly whether it was during Lisa's presentation or Marty's presentation, as to with some of the things that we're doing with the billing system, whether we had any issues with revenue recognition. And I didn't see that reflected in the minutes anywhere, and maybe I'm hallucinating. I would think that maybe in item 6D under other, that if we could just add a statement that says that I asked about, whether there were any revenue recognition issues with the billing system as it was being reworked, and was answered that there were no issues at this juncture. Anybody else recall me asking that?
That rings a bell.
Imagining things that I might have thought and didn't say.
I remember that, Bob. I'll back you up.
Yeah, so we can add that amendment under 6D of the minutes for the April 16th meeting.
Okay.
And I'm going to read this back to you, Bob. I'm taking notes here. Any revenue recognition issues related to the updates to the billing system?
Yes. And I recall that the answer was that there were no issues identified at the time, and no concerns.
Okay, we will get that amended.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, do we have any other questions on the consent agenda?
I had one question on the check registers. It looked like we had a bunch of checks at the end that were marked with an M. Are those just a bunch of manual checks, or what?
Yeah, those are manual checks. They're checks that we do ACHs with. So then they're largely payroll related. So that's what the M means.
Okay.
Are they for credit cards?
Our credit cards with Wells Fargo, so they just directly debit our checking account for that amount, and then we pay the IRS and Fidelity and all of our payroll taxes and expenses with ACHs.
I had a question about the refund, the overpayments, particularly the one to the Park City School District. Is that similar to what the issue was with Home Depot, or is that a different issue?
That's similar, Tim. That was found as part of that same audit process of the billing system we've been working through.
Weren't there individual residents that were also getting refunds of overpayment? Are those the same issues, or is that related to something else? There are some customers that look like, rather than businesses, maybe they own the businesses.
The customers you're seeing on the check register, Tim, that get refunds, they're either getting refunded their original deposit when they first paid their impact fee, because now they've come on as water customers, or if they've sold the property and maybe they've overpaid a bill and then paid again at closing, and so we refund them whatever they maybe have overpaid. Any refunds to customers? There haven't been any because of billing issues that we've had to actually send a check for.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Anything else on the consent agenda?
I had a related question to Tim's on the Park City School District. Did we reach out to them before refunding them almost $44,000?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd be pretty darn excited if somebody called me with that, phone call.
Yeah, the team, Marty and Steve and Lisa, let me know of the refund that was due. And we reached out to their head of facilities, who put me in touch with their business director. And I had a couple of conversations with him We also had him sign and notarize an authorization form that he was the appropriate person to receive that check, just like we did with Home Depot. So, yeah, he was thrilled. It's about a year's worth of usage bills for them.
And similar to Home Depot, do we think there's any perceived risk there of them wanting to come back based on being overcharged, or did he express, you know, no contest there?
No, he was not confrontational at all. He was very appreciative for our honesty.
Cool. That's it for me. Thanks.
Yeah, paid for a quarter of the new driveway for the superintendent.
Okay, then if we don't have any more questions on the consent agenda, we're ready for a motion for approval.
I move to approve the consent agenda.
There a second?
A second.
That's Tim. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That sounds unanimous. Okay, item five. Questions on department updates. I don't know. We could go. Who wants to go first?
If you want, Mike, I can do the roll call, or if do you want to do the roll call, either way.
Why don't you just you can do it, please?
Okay. Why don't you start, Mike?
I didn't look this over, so I don't have any yet.
Okay. How about you, Tim?
I do. On the manager's report, could you explain the 30% increase from the Weber River, what that's all about, or is that something you're going to talk about later?
No, I'm not. Now's a good time. So over the past few years, we've been working on a couple of water right, not transfers, shuffles, if you will. One was the one that Doug was working on that took a few years. That allowed us to move some East Canyon water rights to Silver Creek over points of diversion where we could make use of those. I and Doug have been working on the next step of that, and that is that had created a surplus in Silver Creek, and I had concerns over how much water the Silver Creek aquifers could really sustain. And I wanted to add, as a point of diversion to some of those rights, shallow wells that we have along the banks of the Weber River just upstream of our main intake for the Lost Canyon system. These shallow wells pump water into the Lost Canyon system and allow us to move it up the hill. So we were able to get those points of diversion added to water to an exchange right to the tune of 372 acre feet. Mountain Regional's share of the Lost Canyon allocation previously was 1,180 acre feet. So this is an additional 372 acre feet, that benefits or augments that that source of supply and allows us to relieve that equal amount of burden off of the Silver Creek aquifers. So another real big success for the district.
Is this a windfall of some sort on supply?
To some extent it is, Tim, because only if the aquifers in Silver Creek could produce all of that water, then it wouldn't be any change in supply. But groundwater is challenging to predict, and what this does is it provides some redundancy or resiliency on that nearly 400 acre feet. And from my perspective, I'm trying to relieve the burden on our groundwater sources and move that to surface water. And from that perspective, I think it's a huge, huge positive for the district.
Hey, Scott. So we got the almost 400 acre feet. Is that fairly closely matched up to the capacity of those wells?
So that's a good question, Bob. So these are infiltration wells. They're basically shallow and wide wells right at the riverbank. So those wells, the production fluctuates based on the time of year. So during runoff, they produce a lot more than they do during, you know, the end of the summer when flows are low. I believe these wells can move more water than that. We're in the process of getting them cleaned up, getting our telemetry system connected, and we'll start using them and get a better sense of how much they can really provide. But some history for you is that these wells were, they constituted the source of the Lost Canyon system before the intake was built back in the early 2000s.
Okay.
Scott, do these need to go through the plant or are they groundwater sources?
They need to be treated, Mike. So what this does is it allows us to utilize, you know, our available capacity in the Lost Canyon system that we're not utilizing today. The next step is to look at capital improvements to the treatment plant to be able to treat that increased capacity and thus be able to serve the additional growth that's coming our way.
And the final question I had was on engineering. Is, am I reading this right? Someone has a private 1.2-acre pond at Quarry Mountain Estates?
That's correct.
Okay.
And they fill it up with our water?
They are in the process of designing a connection to our system to fill it up. Yeah, we've been working on a water service agreement and, you know, associated impact fees and such with this customer for the last year or so.
Will that be culinary?
It would be, yeah.
Okay.
They have a surface water diversion, but they're interested in a backup makeup water source.
Okay. I guess if you want a pond, you want a pond.
Any other questions on the department reports? Oh, let's see. Anything else from you, Tim?
No.
Okay. Moving around the roll call, Bob?
I had a question on the Kilby Road annexation.
Sure.
That's not one of those lots where our lines run through the middle of the lot, and every time something happens, we got to go dig up somebody's driveway, parking lot, whatever it might be, and restore it after we leave.
Not in this case. Not in
that is the case.
No, not in this case. In this case, the home is on the opposite side of Kilby Road in relation to our water line.
Okay. Thank you.
Ian?
Scott, on yours, I saw you went to the regionalization meeting with the master agreement stakeholders. Any highlights from that you want to share? Or is that going to be in your general manager comments?
No, I can just share a touch on a couple things. A lot of it focused on just the infrastructure that's being built. So Park City's finishing their interconnections to the regional system. So, you know, currently Mountain Regional is the only one that has a functional interconnect where we can move water to another party, that party being Summit Water. Park City is finishing a bi-directional system over near their Quinns plant. So it focused quite a bit on the construction side. They did ask about for an update with respect to our regional water supply rate. I let them know that we were in the middle of a rate study, that we had hired Lewis Young, Robertson, and Birmingham to perform that, and that we'd be in touch later in the summer. Those were a couple topics. They also presented and talked about the drought response plan, but that's something Mountain Regional has been familiar with for a couple of years now. Some of the other parties were not. So.
Okay. Two quick questions for Lisa. One was, I noted you mentioned there was higher residential usage. Wondering any thoughts on that. And then the second was just in regard to the topic Scott just talked about, the Lewis and Young rate study if they're still on target with the completion date. I think we're going to review that at the next board meeting.
Yep, it's still set for review at the next board meeting in June. We had a call with them today. We'll go over both those items in the financial section then.
Okay, that's fine. Okay. And then my last question was going to be on Sam's notes, the LC transmission pigging. Any highlights on how that went? Any insights? Significant scale? Any problems with the pigging?
Hey, Brian, do you want to take that since you weren't sleeping last night?
Yeah, I'm glad it's over. I had a lot of sleepless nights worrying about it getting stuck.
Yeah.
It came out. It came out totally destroyed. It had bent in half for part of the pigging process. So, but the resulting water that came out after was actually pretty clean.
Okay.
It looked cleaner than what we were pumping prior to that out of the river. So, we didn't have any black water like Park City did.
Yeah, or Jordan Valley Water Conservancy District last time they did. So that's good news.
Yeah,
go ahead, Brian.
Just clean brown water. So good. It was a good learning experience, though. We learned a lot. So I'm just glad it's over.
Okay, thank you. And then in closing, I really appreciated the thoroughness of Sam's notes. You know, as someone new to the staff, it was nice to see how much he's working on and the detail he put into those. So pass on a thank you to him, please.
I will. All of his work is extremely thorough, which has been great. Okay, Karen, do you have any questions?
I just had a question. Who's Kathy and what does she do in the finance department? I guess I kind of thought it was just Lisa and Steve.
Lisa, do you want to fill Karen in? Looks like Lisa's frozen at the moment.
She's having some trouble with her.
No.
Kathy does our accounts payable and runs payroll for us. So kind of some accounting clerk type responsibilities.
Do you think you're going to have any trouble finding a replacement for her? Or?
Right now, the plan is Lisa and I are just during the summer. Fortunately, that's a little bit slower time for us because the audit's over and the budgeting process hasn't really started. So we're going to just split her duties during the summer, and then hopefully some of this COVID stuff is starting to calm down and we can have a chance to do some interviews, you know, late summer, early fall, and get that position replaced before it gets busy, real busy for us again. So.
Okay, great. That was the only question I had.
You bet.
Oh, Scott, I'm sorry. I had one other question, I guess, for Marty. So it's time of the year where we go out and lean front paid bills. Are we making any adjustments to that process because of the pandemic?
Yes, and we've been working with Lisa and Steve on that. We actually are only leaning back through the end of February before all of this actually started, not going till, until May like we typically do in a normal year. And so we've made those adjustments. And, you know, it's really the same people that are on mostly every year. So I don't know that Liz may totally change for next year, you know, depending on how everything goes. But at this point, it's just, it's just the people that have been delinquent through the end of February.
And do we expect that the county council will just handle those in the ordinary course of business as they have in years past?
You know, we've talked to Dave and Lee about that, and they said just handle it like we normally have. They didn't think the council would have any issues with this. So we're proceeding as if that's what will happen. We're trusting Dave.
I think
we do always, which is always trusting Dave. Him on this one. Yeah. We always trust him.
Always dangerous.
And I think another important point that I often forget about is the lien process. As Marty said, we're only taking those delinquent accounts that were delinquent at the end of February, and those were accounts that were delinquent more than 90 days late already at that point. So we're well outside of any COVID impacts on these accounts.
All right. Okay. Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. That completes the roll call on the department updates. Mike, you want to move to the next item?
Sure. Is number six, updates from Scott and Dave on COVID district actions. Want to take us through those, please, Dave?
Yeah, I can start there.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's more. Yeah.
With the district side.
Yeah.
Just a couple highlights. You know, following our long meeting on the 16th of April, we had a follow-up small board meeting with Ian and Tim and Bob to talk through those policies again. We had our face covering policy. We also had the amended leave policy. During that meeting, they recommended those to be forwarded to council for approval. Council did not have any... they did not push back, if you will, on our dates. If you remember, we were extending an additional couple weeks of unlimited leave afforded to our employees that ran through or will run through May 16th. So a quick update there. Council approved those policies on the 29th of April. We, for those of you who aren't familiar, Governor Herbert has what's called the Utah Leads Together 2.0 plan. If you haven't read it, I recommend you take a few minutes to glance through it if you want to have some visibility into where we're going. Summit County is following that plan very closely, and the district, certainly are as well. As you know, governor moved from red to orange in his health guidance system level on May 1st and down to yellow today, which is effective Saturday. But Summit County is going to remain at that orange level, you know, for some time to come. I don't know if that's a couple weeks or what that is. Dave can elaborate on that. Largely orange means that there's really not much change in the precautions that the district's taken compared to where we were prior to May 1st. And then lastly is that that Tom Fisher had requested the operating plans for this stabilization phase that we're in. That operating plan touched on essentially the identification of areas of risk and exposure and the steps that we'll take to mitigate those internally. It's very similar to the surveys that went out to local businesses for businesses to respond to the county on how they might be able to get their doors back open and what precautions they would take. So I provided, backing up, the administrative team here at the district worked together on that plan. And then I submitted that back to Tom and also to the health department for their review. And the health department was happy with it. And I haven't heard any negative comment from the county. So that's the update from my side. Dave, do you want to chat about the county?
Certainly. On May the 1st, the county lifted its stay-at-home order and transitioned to the orange phase, which was consistent with what the governor wanted. The county went in and got an exemption from the governor's order that allowed us to put on an additional layer of business-specific protocols for the orange level, and the county derived those additional specific protocols from a working group that consisted of representatives of all the industries within Summit County. It was quite an expansive group. Each individual industry elected their own representatives, basically, and got together and presented the health department with the plan for their business. So the hoteliers got together and presented a plan on how to open up hotels and so forth. And the county basically dropped those specific protocols into its May the 1st order, got the exemption from the governor to allow that to happen. That order was or is valid all the way through Friday night at midnight. There is a new order that was approved today. The governor, he issued a new executive order today to move most of the state to yellow from the orange phase, with the exception of Summit County, Grand County, and Wasatch County, and Salt Lake City and West Valley City. The county had asked the governor for an exemption not to move to yellow, and to allow us to ease some of the restrictions that we had in our prior order. And that meant lifting the additional protocols for all the other industries except for four. And those four were restaurants, lodging, indoor recreational facilities, and arts and entertainment venues. So the governor approved that exemption today, and the county council issued their order about 40 minutes ago. It'll go into effect at 12:01 a.m. on Saturday. And under those guidelines, the county is still in orange, but the county has adopted the governor's phased health guidelines 4.1 for orange phase. And the county has basically kept its same additional business-specific protocols for those four areas that I mentioned. The county's order is good for one week. That's all that the governor would allow us, an exemption. He wants us to relook at things in a week and report back to him and determine whether or not we think we need to stay in orange, or if we can go to yellow, or we can go to yellow with some additional business-specific protocols in those four areas I mentioned. We'll see what happens. The triggers for moving to yellow for the county has to do with it's called the R-naught value. The R-naught value is a mathematical formula that derives the contagious level. If one person has the virus, how many other individuals they will infect. The idea is that if we keep our R-naught value in the county under 1.2, that could be one indication we go to yellow. Right now, we've been underneath that for at least a week. This additional week will allow us to evaluate that further. The county's also looking at the number of cases per 100,000 residents. Summit County has been somewhat high in that number, but we've been steadily going down, which is a good sign. county will also look at the total number of current hospitalizations to evaluate whether or not our healthcare system is in any danger. Looking at those, and then we're also going to look at what Salt Lake City is doing, West Valley City, as well as Wasatch County, because a lot of our workers come from those areas. So they're going to be looking to see if those areas are going to yellow or whether they're staying in orange. So by this time next week, we'll have a new county order. Depending upon what the numbers look like, the county will either stay at orange or go to yellow. So that's kind of where we sit right now.
Hey, Dave, do you know offhand when we speak of incident per resident or population, mm-hmm. what population number we're using?
It's the number of individuals who have a confirmed case per 100,000 residents.
And residents is full-time residents, part-time residents?
Census residents, yeah.
Census. Okay.
So based on that
number...
So it's
almost 10 years old, then, the number of residents, huh?
Well, I mean, they update it periodically based on estimates.
Yeah.
But right now, Summit County's estimate is 43,000 full-time residents.
43,000.
And so right now, I think we're second in the state in terms of the number of incidents per 100,000. That puts us in a moderate category. There are places in the state which are still red in terms of those numbers. Right now, we're in orange in terms of that incidence per 100,000, which is one of the reasons why we're still in orange. But, I mean, we'll just have to look at those numbers in a week.
Yeah.
Dave, can I ask a question, too? When you talk about hospitalizations, are you talking about Summit County hospitalizations? Are they staying up here? Are they going to Salt Lake? Do you know how that works?
They're generally staying in our Park City Hospital. The more serious cases are shipped off to Salt Lake County, but it's part of the IHC system of hospitals. What they have done is IHC designated that the Wasatch County Hospital that they have would have all non-COVID patients, and all COVID patients for both Wasatch and Summit County would use the Summit County Hospital, the Park City Hospital. And then, like I said, significant cases would then be shipped to Murray, the IHC hospital there.
Because if I recall correctly, I think there's only four ICU beds in this hospital here, if I recall correctly.
Yes, but they've rearranged some things, so they have more beds, and they kind of cordon off part of the hospital.
No, gotcha. Thanks, Dave.
If you go to the hospital, you know, they, anybody who walks in, they have symptoms checked, they take your temperature, they ask you a bunch of questions. We're getting a lot of people who are complaining about not wanting to go to the Park City Hospital because of the intense screening just to get in.
Gotcha. Thank you.
And we still have testing going on in the county. We still have a testing site at the ice rink. And we have an expanded number of tests available so that it now, if really anyone who really wants to get a test can probably get a test.
Not necessarily. I went up there four times to get a test for elective surgery, Dave.
Yeah.
And the only way I finally got it was to say I was sick.
Yeah, all you have to do is say that I have a fever.
Yeah.
I've been feeling bad. You don't need any of the other criteria anymore.
Right. But then, theoretically, you're not allowed to have the surgery if you have a fever.
Yeah.
Anyway, it isn't, it's just a personal observation when I hear all the complaining about lack of testing. All four times that I went to the testing site, I was the only person there, and there were at least a dozen staff people running around with PPE on and et cetera, et cetera.
No. We've been a test site for antibodies testing as well. Because Summit County was so hard hit, the state was good enough to send additional tests. So, I mean, in Summit County, we've tested 5,000-6,000 residents.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've done a lot more testing than most areas have, which has been good for us. And it's provided a lot more data that I know the health department has used to evaluate things.
Okay, well, I think that's really informative and helpful, Dave. You have any other questions?
Are we talking about COVID generally at this point?
Yeah, that was six. So then we're ready to go. If there's no other COVID questions, we'll go on to seven, and then Dave will have a legal update on eight.
I just had a quick sort of update question. So when we had our last meeting, we were talking about sort of the number of people who are, you know, impacted by the policy at this point, and it seemed like most of it was people with school-age children that they had to work around. Has there been any change in status on any of that, Scott or Lisa?
No change that I'm aware of. Lisa, anything that you're aware of?
Nope, no change. And of the people who were having school-related issues with kids, those are being worked out. So it's very little usage on that code any longer.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right.
You're welcome.
Okay, well, Lisa, you can just keep going. We're on item seven here, financial management, please, and Steve.
Okay, Steve's going to do the April report, and then I'll talk about COVID impacts to the 2020 budget.
Sounds good.
Scott, did you want to bring that up, or I could share my screen possibly? And
yeah, why don't I stop sharing mine, Steve, so you can drive?
Okay.
You should.
All right. Overall, the message is good. We're in a good position. I'll go through each of the areas as quickly as we can. So let's get down to just the overall big picture. So revenue, we're $128,000 over budget or better than budget, and expenses were $273,000 below. And so we're to the good $400,000. So we're kind of in a good position as the end of April moving forward. I'm going to go down to the next. Let's talk about the revenue year to date just a little bit. So in retail water sales, you'll see we're high. We've seen that higher use in residential, large residential. Ian, that you were asking about, I'll talk about that a little bit more. We are down in Park City Wheeling. They have not taken water in March or April. So basically they haven't been paying for any usage. They just pay a base fee for those months. So we've taken a hit there. There's a good chance we'll make most of that back up as they start to take water again. But given everything, that's a little still up in the air, let's say. So that's where the $127,000 over budget comes from. Now, if we're looking at the change versus last year, you'll see that our retail water sales are up quite a bit over last year. We planned most of that because we knew community water was coming on, but we're even higher than that. We've got the additional revenue from Weber Basin. You'll see we get $168,000 more per quarter this year because of the additional volume we're sending them and also the price increases. Versus last year, you'll see, though, that we are down, again, in Park City Wheeling development-related collections and other revenue. Ironically, or funny enough, they're all about $45,000 down. But we're still $250,000 above last year's revenues. Come down to here. We thought this was interesting, so we wanted to share this with you. So we usually don't give you just a specific month's numbers. We're always giving you year-to-date numbers, but we wanted to look at April just to kind of show the impact of COVID and weather patterns a little bit. So you'll see water sales residential were actually above budget by a little over $17,000. We've had a warm, dry start to the spring, and also people are using more water as their home more. You'll see we had a drop in commercial, which we would have expected from COVID. You know, a lot of businesses shutting down. The schools are down. Industrial's down. The Park City Wheeling is down. But overall, ended up very close to what we budgeted for April. We're just $2,000 under because basically the loss in commercial and things like that, we kind of made up in residential. So just wanted to kind of give you that snapshot of April. And we'll do the same thing, I think, in May and things. So you can just kind of see the trend as we're going from month to month. Now, the savings we've had in expenses, you'll see to budget, we're actually doing quite well on operations, maintenance, and repairs. We only hired 2 seasonal employees instead of 4. We're just being very conscientious about that type of expenditures. We're below last year. That's a little deceiving because last year at this time, we'd already paid for carbon and membranes at the treatment plant. This year, we're doing that. Actually, we'll pay for some of it in May and probably some of it in June. So we'll probably equalize or get close to about what expenses were last year, but that still would be well below budget. Going to jump down here to cash. Overall, our cash was up $144,000during April. Probably the most important part about our cash right now is this last sentence in this this little paragraph here, that we were watching cash collections very carefully in April to see if we'd have a large drop because we were concerned that might be the case. We actually had a drop, but not significant, just the 3.3%, a little over $17,000. So we'll continue to watch that. From the warm, dry weather and what we're seeing on revenue side, it seems like we're going to have enough that we bill, but the important thing will be that we keep our cash collections up. And if that starts to change, we'll obviously alert the board. We are in a good cash position with our 254 days of operating reserves on hand. So, you know, no immediate need, but it's just something that we want to make sure we watch and follow as we go through the pandemic. Let's see, go down here to customer growth. We've got 33 new customers during so far this year, which is just one above the average of 32 over the 4-year average. The most notable part on this is the impact fees. You'll see that there, for the 4-year average, we averaged $330,000 by this time of year. This year, we're only at $121,000. Even though the connections are about the same, a lot of those are prepaids, and so we're not getting the revenue from those. The $121,000 is about $10,000 below budget at this point on our impact fees.
Do we have much insight on that, Steve, as to what's coming our way?
We've been trying to do some, you know, because people request a sheet, they know what their impact fee is. Sometimes they'll sit on that for quite a while. We've had one request for a refund of an impact fee, but they haven't produced the paperwork we need yet to actually have that happen. So we could have a lot in the funnel, but not very many coming through. Or we could have just a couple in the funnel, but if they both, you know, if they come through, we do well. Kind of like this big project over in the canyons. If that comes in, that's a large impact fee, and we won't have to worry about budget for the year. If it doesn't, we'll probably be fighting to get to somewhere near our budget of $500,000, which would seem hard without a couple of really big impact fees coming in. So,
Steve, just adding a quick comment. You know, you and others are watching this more closely, though, as far as how many are in the funnel, right? It's always difficult to predict which of these are actually going to come through, but we are watching that very closely.
Yeah, Lisa's been doing a lot of work on trying to analyze that and get a better idea of the flow that might be coming through that. I don't know if, Lisa, if you wanted to mention anything there of what you've seen.
Yeah, I have a spreadsheet that we're kind of tracking now with Anna. We used to rely really on the averages because it can vary so significantly from year to year. But I actually am keeping a detailed list now of everything we have in the pipeline, anybody who submitted plans and potentially could walk in the door. Like Steve mentioned, you know, this county project would cover us plus some for the budget this year. What I'm seeing, if we don't get that project, we'll be lucky to get to 500,000. We have a couple, two large colony homes that could potentially come in. They're sitting out there. And I did just get two new requests for some homes on Old Ranch that were both about two ERCs. So they're bigger than just your regular one. But, in April, we just had four Promontory come in and I think one remodel. So really nothing came in April. And I haven't seen anything. And no, maybe we did get one, Steve, in the beginning of May.
I think there was one. I think it was a Promontory one, though, which is...
Yeah, we don't get much on Promontory. So we're watching it closely. And when we get to the next section, when we talk about, maybe some potential budget adjustments, you'll see I'm kind of predicting us to maybe hit $200,000, best case scenario, worst case scenario. But we have some areas we think we have some savings in that we can cover that if our impact fees don't hit budget this year.
Dave, do you get much visibility on building permits at the county level?
I don't know.
Yeah. We'll keep watching this and for sure keep this updated. The other revenue areas seem like we'll probably be able to trade a little bit from maybe more residential, less commercial, but this could be one that we are below budget significantly. Consumption.
You know that project they keep talking about in Kimball Junction, over, I guess it's over by where Maxwell's is, sort of in that area. Is that our service territory or is that somebody else?
It is, Bob. That was the project that started as townhomes and now it's a number of apartments. They paid last year, if memory serves me correctly.
Okay, so that's not a prospect anymore.
Yeah, it was last year.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
On usage, when we look at the year-to-date numbers, you will see that our MRW, our own customers, we're up almost 20% in usage. That is reflected in the additional residential revenue we've been generating. So that's good. You'll see the Park City, the large drop of 45% since they didn't take any water. Summit Water, again, where we've got more revenue, they're also taking more water because that's the plan for this year. And overall, it's funny, they kind of all wash out again to almost the exact number of gallons and acre feet that we were doing this time this year, we're doing again, or the four-year average. So usage isn't coming from exactly the same spots, but overall it's coming out to be about the same. So,
Steve?
Steve,
yes, sorry?
City probably has the same kind of table that you had that showed the residential and commercial and all that other business, they're probably not going to be seeing a very quick rebound on their restaurants and hotels, are they? And we're probably going to see a pretty sustained drop in Park City for maybe the rest of the year, right?
Yeah, and I think we, and one of the sentences that kind of alluded to that, it's hard to predict how much of their consumption will come back or how much of the water they need from us, just because they are more commercial based than we are, more residential based. So I think ours is actually more predictable than theirs right now. So
they're required to give us any kind of a forecast at all, Steve, or anything, part of the contract?
I don't believe they give us any forecasts, Scott. They have the rights up to 2,900 acre feet. They've taken about 2,200 the last couple of years.
Right.
The fact that they're only at 277 right now is pretty low, but at the same time, the pipeline can supply a lot if their Quinns Junction can process it. So not out of the realms that we'd get back up to a good number this year, but they would definitely have to turn things on and let them run.
I had asked Park City for a forecast as we were in the middle of our rate study on our regional water supply late last year, and they just said, expect us to take it all, and they haven't taken any the last 2 months. So.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, obviously not intimately familiar with the contract, whether they have to give us any notification or whether they just, you know, if they went dry, they went dry. And that's the way life is, you know.
Yeah, well, and the nice thing is, because of the shared ownership in some of the system, we do have the base element that they'll have to pay us this year of the $37,000 per month. So that would still help with cash flow and collections, even if we're not getting the usage. And the way the rate's calculated, if a small amount of usage is spread over all those costs, next year they'd be paying a higher rate for the water, and then it would be adjusted because it's adjusted every year. So it will be interesting.
Hey, Steve?
Yeah.
So Quinns Junction, their plant, has been under a remodel for the last few months. I anticipate that they're going to start taking water probably next week. So just to let you know, they're going to start ramping up, but they're just, this pigging thing slowed them down a little bit, but they should start ramping up here pretty soon.
Yeah, it'd be, so our May numbers will probably still reflect really low, because we'll read in just, you know, about 7 to 10 days, but it'd be nice to see at least some start to move, and then if it can really pick up in June, I think that makes us all a lot more optimistic about the rest of the year with Park City.
I don't know what Summit County's or Summit Water's mix is between residential and commercial. We heard any rumblings out of them about wanting to redo the contract on how much water they take or anything like that?
No, Bob, I think their mix is fairly similar to ours.
Yeah, that's what I would have guessed.
And they're not able to redo the contract without a lot of challenges.
Yeah, I don't know if they could claim like force majeure or something like that.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything, and I don't expect anything of that nature.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. We'll come down to just the capital budget, hit a couple of highlights here. You'll see that community water obviously is our big capital investment this year. We spent $1.2 million of the $2.6 million loan. The $600,000 that's encumbered is basically the big project over in Hidden Creek. So when that's done, we will have spent $1.8 million of the budget. But fortunately, that's the last really big piece, and so we'll keep you updated on that. We did get reimbursed from the state loan for the big well drilling and all that kind of stuff, so that was a nice little amount of money to put back in our cash as well. The Summer Park Steve, project...
Steve, what's the Hidden Creek project?
Scott, do you want to?
Yeah, I can help you with that. The Hidden Creek project, Mike, is there is a small facility being built in the Hidden Creek subdivision, which is just below the Grand Summit there, off of Canyons Resort Drive. And then also a couple water main sections and a handful of master meter vaults. So we call it the Hidden Creek project because a lot of the improvements are there in Hidden Creek. But the improvements really do stem throughout the community water system.
What kind of improvements are they?
One is a valve station. It's a facility that's going to allow us to control the water that we bring down from their sources into our system. There are two water main sections. One is in the Hidden Creek subdivision. One is adjacent to the Red Pine subdivision on Red Pine Road. And then there are... I believe five or six master meter vaults that are spread all throughout their system.
Okay, thank you.
And the Summit Park project, they have started on that, as our employees in that area will attest to. But it is looking like it's going to come in under budget, so that'll help our whole capital project budget. And then... we did get a new truck, which the guys were really excited about because I kind of mentioned in here it's gas but has enough horsepower and torque to pull our stuff around. Maintaining the diesel is just kind of a pain and things like that, so they're really hopeful this truck works out well because it can be a little cheaper and serve the same purpose without as much cost on the maintenance side. So that's kind of the financial update. But, you know, I think it's still good news. We've done well. At least we're kind of heading into what could be tough with COVID, you know, $400,000 above budget at this point in time. So, any questions? Nope.
Thanks, Steve.
You bet. All right. I'll stop sharing my screen. And I think Lisa, Mike, is maybe going to do the next part.
Yep. I don't have my video on just because I think that's not helping my connection here tonight. So I just wanted to kind of go over some revenue projections we're looking at, potential adjustments. We've kind of been alluding to them. These are, you know, probably worst case scenario, a more conservative approach. And as we've seen, even over the last week or last couple of weeks, it's warmed up pretty quickly and people have turned on their sprinklers early. And I'd say 6 weeks earlier than we saw it this time last year. So that's definitely going to help with revenue where in May, where last May we, and even into June, we really didn't see usage numbers. And I think we're already going to have pretty good usage numbers in May. So you can see here these items in this orange color. This is kind of our retail water usage that we were potentially could have some variance on if people decided, hey, my water bill's too high, I'm going to, you know, not put out as much water. I've got to watch what my expenses look like. So, you know, I've kind of been hearing a 20% is maybe what people might be seeing other water entities are kind of experiencing. And this kind of, you know, this $550,000 or so essentially takes us from we'd be budgeting from an average year to a wet year. Like I mentioned, I think we're going to end up in a hot, dry summer again, just throwing it out there. So I think, you know, any decrease we may see COVID related, I think we might pick up because we've started early and people have turned their sprinklers on. So Park City Wheeling, again, this is probably a worst case scenario. We're about $50,000 under budget right now. I wasn't sure how long this May, you know, not taking any water in May was going to last. It sounds like they're going to be online again here fairly quickly. And, you know, I hope that they do end up putting, you know, the water they said they were going to put through that 2,900 acre feet, but things have changed.
So again, I'm just kind of being conservative and doubling this number. Maybe it's $100,000 we see on an annualized basis. Operating fees and other, this is, I'm showing an adjustment here for $100,000 in meter connection fees. That's just impact fee related. We're not getting those connection fees coming in if people aren't pulling building permits and paying impact fees. And then we also are currently not assessing penalties and late fees. So we've done that for the last 2 months. We have talked to other utilities in the area, and I've, you know, been on some calls with other utilities around the nation, and everyone's, you know, in this same holding pattern with not applying any late fees or penalties, not instituting shutoffs. You know, as the country starts to come out of lockdown and, you know, start to return to somewhat of the new normal, you know, we'll start to assess when we think it would be appropriate to start charging late fees and penalties. Right now, I do know that Summit Water is on hold indefinitely doing that. Park City has committed through September, and the sewer district has committed through August to their customers. So I anticipate we'll probably run this for one more month, and then it would be my recommendation to kind of come online with any kind of late fees and penalties as other utilities do in the area. But that is about a $15,000, you know, hit to our revenue by not collecting those fees. Down in impact fees, we talked a little bit earlier about...
Well, Lisa, you know, just to be clear, that is a forgiveness of those, not a deferral.
Correct. We're not applying them at all. Impact fees, through the last recession, we collected about $200,000 was what we'd see per year. Right now, we're just over $100,000. So, you know, if we kind of looked back to that time period, we'd say maybe $200,000 is the number, and we're about $300,000 short. Like I mentioned, we have a handful, maybe more than a handful, that if they come in, you know, we could get above that number, maybe into 300, 400,000. But I'm definitely projecting, you know, it's going to be hard to get to 500,000. I think it's going to be probably 2 to 4. If the county project comes in, then that completely, you know, we hit our budget and then some. Interest earnings, significantly down. We were close to 3%, I think we were earning on the PTIF funds last year, and we're down to 1.5%, and they're saying it's going to lose 10 to 20 basis points per month going forward. So I am anticipating very few revenue or very little revenue collections on interest earnings. No, another 85,000, I think, is what we're going to see it as an adjustment there. And lower cash balances are also going to add to that. On the summary side, let me just show that revenue. So we're sitting total operating revenue and total non-operating revenue about 1.15 potential. We've been looking at our expenses and kind of digging into everyone's budget. I've met with all the department heads and tried to get a handle on where we may be able to see some savings. And we're coming up with just over $500,000 we think we can find in savings. We're looking off, and I mentioned some of these things last time. We have a GAPS and a GIS administrator that we had planned on hiring. We're holding off on that right now. It's about $110,000. We have some power savings and some contingency that's built into our Last Canyon budget. We've been trying to run our wells more than kind of save chemicals and water that's been going through the treatment plant and treating it. So we definitely have seen, you know, some lower repair costs, I think, happening up here. We think we have some power savings in here as well.
treatment plant. We were scheduled and we put in the budget to have some engineering work done with Jacobs for some plant optimization. We've done a little bit of that, but we're kind of in a holding pattern right there. We'd like to have that work done, but we just need to kind of see how these next couple months shake out with usage. Distribution and safety, we hired two seasonals versus our four. And again, if we have the lower usage, we'll see some power savings here. It's about $55,000 total. In the general manager and non-operations sections, it's basically all of the admin departments. Scott has a water quality technician we were going to try to hire because our last one moved into back into distribution last year. We're currently still holding off on that. And then we've also seen some savings in our training and travel budgets as we don't anticipate any conferences or traveling to any other conferences this year, at least right now. So that's kind of where we're seeing some potential savings. If we just look at kind of an overall summary, this yellow line down here, potential exposure, I think, in a kind of worst case scenario, about $500,000 to the district. If we were to pick up, and that's still, we still meet our coverage ratios with that, just so to let you know, we're still meeting our 1.25 with that kind of adjustment. So we're okay. Impact fees can change that dramatically. If we had the Canyons housing project come in, we'd be on and above budget. So, you know, that impact fees is really the most volatile. And if we do get good usage with people being home and watering and it's a hot summer, you know, that probably wipes away that $500,000 in usage. So we'll continue to monitor it and keep you updated, but that's where we are right now. Any questions?
That was a really nice analysis, Lisa.
Yeah, very helpful.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Lisa. You're welcome.
Okay. We don't have anything else there on item 7. We can move on to 8. Dave Thomason, legal.
Hey, Mike, before we jump to that, Steve, do you want to just give a real brief update on the rate study that's going on as part of financial?
Yeah, we had a really nice meeting with Fred from Lewis and Young today. His model, he's putting together a nice model. We like it. It's very supportive of numbers we were generating before. So in June, you'll receive some information. He'll do a presentation. I'm looking forward to having his model support the numbers we were kind of giving you last year. Definitely around that $6 mark, you know, we'll be there. So it looked good. I was impressed. I think we were all impressed with what he'd had done today. So next month will be fun.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Okay. That's good to hear. Okay, are we ready for our legal update? Looks like we have some annexations.
There are two annexations. The first, I would probably defer to Marty on. The second is the one that's the employee housing project in the Canyons. And you would be looking to make a recommendation to the county council as your governing body.
The first annexation is the Wheeler property. And that is... it's right next to Maydell's, if you know where that is on Kilby Road. It's an auto repair, kind of a little place with, it's really old. It's been here forever. It's just about two properties up from the Woodward facility on the same side of the road. So our water line runs along the I-80 side of Kimball, and they would be crossing the road, and they're installing a fire hydrant as well as the water service for their home. It's old property from, you know, some of the original Parkites that had that there. I think their grandkids or something. So, yeah, they've been interested to... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's residential, then.
Yes, it's residential.
Is it that little trapezoidal shaped one there?
I'm sorry, I can't see the...
on the map that we've got.
Stand by, Mike. I'll bring it up here. I'll share the screen.
Thanks. Thank you.
It was like an elongated trapezoid.
Yeah, okay. Is it just one unit, or how many?
It's it's a residential use.
So it's just NX1 residents in?
Correct. It's not in yet, but they're in the process of building.
Okay. Yeah. Marty, who owns that lot just to the west of them, the one that's more of a triangle right next to Wileman?
Oh, I'm not sure exactly. You know, we've been contacted by all of those people over the years to come into the district, but nobody's ever really done it. You know, that's a high-pressure line, so they end up having to, to do a PRV, which is usually it talks them out of doing anything. These people actually have a family spring, I think, behind. You know, the little creek goes behind this property, you know, East Canyon Creek, I think, and they have some spring that comes off of there that the family uses. There's all these other residents around them, their family. This is like the piece that they're developing for their own house.
Yeah, I was just wondering if the triangle piece was that same family, but okay.
I bet it is. It wouldn't surprise me, but I apologize. I don't know that by heart.
So does the staff have any recommendations on this? It seems pretty innocuous at one lot.
Yeah, Mike, I was just going to provide mine. You know, my recommendation is for the board to forward their recommendation to the council to annex that Wheeler property, parcel PP-38-3, to come into our district. And then it would be a second motion, I believe, for a recommendation again to the council to bring in what we term as the LV6A parcel with the condition that we do receive their signed and notarized petition form, because I've yet to receive that.
Why did you put them together, Scott? It seems like we didn't talk about
LVDAM. We can have further discussion on LV6A. That was the parcel that Dave alluded to, which is the Canyon's workforce housing project that we talked about during our last meeting.
Well, these are completely different, aren't they? This one is...
Yep. Yeah, so the Wheeler property is a residential annexation, and item 8B for the LV6A parcel, that is the large parcel in the Lower Canyons Village that will which is where this workforce housing project is planned to be built. That we discussed during the April meeting.
Okay. And are there any questions on either one of these proposed annexations? Okay. So then I think somebody could just use the so moved. I think Scott teed it up pretty nice for somebody to do that, or we could have a new motion.
I say we
so I'll move that we recommend to the county council the annexation of the workforce housing project and the single lot application off of Kilby Road.
With the condition...
If you want to throw that, they've got to provide a signed application.
Right, on the provision that they provide a signed application for the workforce housing.
Thank you, Bob. Is there a second?
Second.
That's Karen. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
That sounds unanimous. Okay. Anything else, Dave?
Nope.
Okay. Scott, item 9, any general manager comments?
I don't have any further comment this evening, unless there are specific questions for me. My goal was to try to keep this meeting shorter after the long one we had last month.
Yeah, you guys did a great job tonight. I think we're right where we want to be. That feels about right, at an hour and a half.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you, everybody. We're going to be adjourned at 7:32, and just encourage everybody to be really safe and diligent with this COVID thing.